Dag Hammarskjöld.
Hammarskjöld.
Just like you said it. Dag Hammarskjöld.
Hammarskjöld.
Now, who's doing the heavy breathing?
Nobody?
Well, they were when Jeff asked for quiet.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Hi, this is Chris Harmer of Harmershow Auctions, and I'm at Stamp Show here today. It's a to send up.
Welcome to Stamp Show here today, podcast number 25. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Lloyd, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, the bidding war, stamp collecting in history, Maya Angelou, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag stamp collecting, and our expert topic of the week is errors.
More specifically, design errors.
Well, actually, I think it's all errors.
Is it all errors?
Yeah.
Whatever you guys can think of.
There's some wacky stuff out there, so.
So, stamp news. A bidding war erupted on eBay over a 22-cent Prexy Solo on cover. So, why is that important?
It went for $4,500.
$4,050.
I'm sorry.
$4,050. That's a hell of a lot for a Prexy.
Yes. They're scarce. Well, obviously, this stamp is scarce. Because it had a 1 cent over...
it was a supplemental surcharge.
It was a supplemental mm-hmm. surcharge. And that's kind of the only way you get the 22-center use. You can see 21 centers, and then you see kind of all the values all mixed together. But to get a single 22-cent stamp properly used is nigh on and impossible, except for this one. It may be a unique item.
I guess the catalog value for this stamp properly used on cover is supposed to be $1,000, I think.
That's for a solo usage.
So yeah, it's for solo usage. So this went for four times the rate. It's cute because it was sent by a stamp collector or a stamp dealer.
Well, so, sometimes it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, in most stamp dealers, their commercial uses, as long as it's a current stamp in usage, it's still a current use.
Well, the hitch, too, is that a stamp collector would use the proper stamp also, whereas a business may tend to use a meter mm-hmm. or something else that was in their box or whatever.
Yeah, but so, just because this was a stamp collector, it shouldn't be maligned because it's a stamp dealer. So it's not a philatelic use. It's a commercial usage. The stamp dealer was probably doing business.
Yeah.
And it's a commercial usage. It's a genuine commercial usage.
Well, it's not like a Benton Harbor cut up imperf used way out of date. It's, you know, it was properly used.
And they said it was a business cover, and he was doing it. Both the sender and recipient was for business purposes, so it counts.
Yeah, it started at $9.99, so it looked like a good deal.
Like that.
It went up a couple of percent.
Well, the person probably didn't know what he had. He said, oh, cool, look at this Aprexion cover. I heard these are valuable. Let's stick it up there and see where it goes.
Well, and then somebody that had that set on their watch list went, oh! And then another guy did, and then it exploded.
Which is why everybody out there who sells on eBay, pay attention to the words you use in your title.
Yes, absolutely.
It sounds like it was a bidding war over two people that wanted to exhibit it, maybe.
That's probably true. Well,
we could look that up easy enough.
Well, we know we have their names, yeah.
No, you just look it up on eBay.
Yeah, but there's no way to tell from the bid history what their names are, what their intent is at all. You just get that weird jumbled letter, asterisk, 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 letter business.
But you'll be able to tell how many brothers there were.
Yeah.
They said it started out with three, and three people sent it up to 400, and then it went down to two people that spiked it up to the 4,000 mark. And then that was halfway through the auction date time.
Yeah, there wasn't even a sharpshooting or anything like
that. Yeah, it still had 3 days to go when it hit that much and just stayed there. Yeah. The other guy said, meh.
Okay, so this week in stamp collecting history, we're going to cover a current topic. So Maya Angelou recently had a stamp dedication. Was April 7?
Is that a question or a statement?
I think it was April 7. And it
just
was
make it up. Yeah, it's April 7th.
April 7th was the day it was going to be commercially available for you.
Jessica's corrections next
there
week.
Go. But it was a big hoopla. Oprah was there, and the Michelle Obama, which was
the FLOTUS.
FLOTUS. That's
First right. Lady of the United States. I think that's an awesome word. Webster needs to add it to their dictionary.
So it's a beautiful stamp. They did a good job, and all of Oprah's people, I'm sure, will buy every single copy. The only problem is the quote on the front is not hers.
Where's the dun-dun-dun button on that red box? There has to be one.
There isn't a dun-dun-dun. We just have to do it.
Yeah.
Dun-dun-dun.
So the phrase in question is, a bird doesn't sing because it has an answer. It sings because it has a song. Which was written in 1967 in a book called A Cup of Sun by Joan Walsh Ogland.
I hint a lawsuit coming toward the post office.
Yes, they were very strong in making sure they said that it is a currently held copyright on the material.
Yes.
Well, I have a news flash for you.
What?
Ogland was contacted this morning, and she said she has no problem with it. Now everybody knows it's her stuff and her book and will immediately rush out to buy it.
And that's probably true, yeah.
That's kind of cool. Nice.
So it was vetted, though. They said they asked the family. They asked...
Well, it came from her first book of her first autobiography was I Know Why the Bird Sings.
Caged Birds Sing.
Caged Birds Sing. And it refers to this. So everybody just assumed that since she put it in the title of her book that it was actually hers, and obviously it wasn't. So Miss Maggie Johnson, who is Maya Angelou's real name, sort of...
She plagiarized.
Yeah, well, it's...
she borrowed.
It would have been nice for her to actually have her quote on the stamp.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Or they could
have... She had so many of them, too.
Yeah.
Of course, after she died, if they put I Rise on a stamp, people might take that as like a zombie reference or something, so...
Well, it's funny you bring that up because you, well, go ahead and talk about it, but I Rise was a little kid's thing they always
had. Yeah, they used that all throughout the 90s. They quoted that everywhere on TV, her reading I Rise out loud. And so I knew one or two phrases of it as a child. And then as I got older and I got into college and I took world literature and started reading some of her stuff, I picked up one of her books and read it to cover that included that poem. You know, this is kind of adult material. This isn't for kids.
And she was an ex-prostitute, which when I read it, it was like, oh, this is not very colorful language. This is kind of out of its...
Well, learning that, now her poem makes sense.
Yeah. Well, she is... She hiked herself up by her bootstraps from being a prostitute to one of the most overhyped poets in the 20th century.
Yeah.
A crowded field.
A very crowded field, yeah.
Okay, so our hashtag STEM stories. I found this great article in Linz, which talks about various ways to expand your collection, including stamp shows, online, stamp clubs, stamp swaps, catalogs, and more. So the article's name is Methods to Acquire More Stamps for Your Collection by Janet Klug.
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 The famous Janet Klug. She's been around for quite a while in very high levels of the stamp world.
Okay. So I want you to tell us how you add your stamp collection on Twitter. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag stamp collecting. So how do you guys personally add to your stamp collections?
Yes.
I take out my wallet and I pull out some money and I hand it to the dealer.
All the above. Yeah.
Well, one thing that you gave us a little article on.
Sometimes
it
I write a check.
I know you have it on the website. A person commented that they don't get very much mail with stamps on it. And I was reading that and I get mail with stamps on it all the time.
Because you buy stamps from other stamp people and they send cool covers.
No, from the business. You know, we get our rent checks and our bills to pay and stuff like that. And a lot of it has stamps on it. Now, obviously, the credit card companies, the bulk mailers, they're going to use meters.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're dealing with a small company, they almost always use stamps.
Oh, I love the packages we get from customers where there was one where there was an entire sheet slapped on the back of a box.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just, ugh. Now, had they canceled it, it would have been even better, but they just kind of, they scribbled all over it. And,
oh, yeah.
Come on, guys, don't get lazy. Not now. You can't be lazy with that and then harass us when we take stamps on mail that we're trying to deliver.
Illegal.
Well, the APS, the most recent APS journal, showed stuff that they have in their sales books. And they have current commemoratives, like the Harry Potter stamps used.
Huh.
And I've only seen one Harry Potter stamp used. And the person who mailed it to us wanted it back.
Exactly.
That's funny.
So, but out of, you know, as long as it's been out, I'm sure that these all disappeared into people's collections and, you know, but I have not seen to date more than one Harry Potter stamp on an envelope.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen one come into our office.
Yeah.
Well, this, my personal favorite way is stamp shows, and this is for all the ladies out there. I usually get free stuff. It's not by flirting or any illicit means. It's just talking to people and being friendly. Buy a couple of things, and the next time, usually I get something free.
Yeah, you're not getting, like, 70s for free, though.
Yeah, pretty much. You remember, you remember when you're young and you have grandpa, and he just likes to talk to you? Well, that happens a lot at stamp shows sometimes, depending on where you're at. Not all dealers are older, but a lot of them are. And when they see a woman at a stamp show, especially one that's decent looking.
Younger.
Especially younger. They just fall all over themselves to give you stuff.
Well, Mike, I took Sean to the Arcadia stamp show last Saturday, and he got free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, kids do, too.
I mean, if you're a kid, stamp collecting is your way to go.
It's like Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You go around with, hold out your bag, and they give you free stuff.
Tom's daughter, Aileen, has more stamps than Tom, and that's exactly why.
Absolutely.
Okay, so tell us about that on our Facebook or Twitter, #stampcollecting, #stampstories. So, updates. What corrections do you have for us today, Mr. Cash?
Well, last week we were speaking about exhibiting, and John Hotchner wrote back to me in an email. He listened to the podcast, and he said, "The only thing I argue about the discussion in episode 24 is the comment that there is nothing valuable in the exhibit. In fact, there are considerable value in the exhibit, but it is mostly not written up and identified." I don't recall what he had there that was valuable, and I didn't mean to insult him, and I don't think he felt insulted by it. I mean, we talk with each other all the time. But or email each other all the time. The idea that I was trying to put forward is that you don't have to have expensive stuff to have cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed this in just spades that, you know, here you can have this stuff that you can pick up anywhere and look at the story to it.
Well, you can even take that then if he did have expensive stuff in there and he didn't identify it as expensive, then it removed that as being a factor. It was still just based on the coolness value.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's it.
Yep. And I just sent a letter to the editor for Randy Neal at the ASDA, basically saying the same thing, is because over the last 2 months, he has had his editorial comments in the ASDA magazine saying exactly that, you know, he wishes, like I do, that the judges would consider the cool factor of the exhibit, not just the expensive part of the exhibit. You know, if you spend $1 million, you get a gold. If you spend $100,000, you get a vermeil. If you spend $25,000, you get a silver or something like that. You know, we could just do that, you know, put a little checklist, how much you pay for it, and then they give you an award based on how much you spend. That's BS, obviously.
Wow, that's deep.
Any other corrections?
And it discourages people from exhibiting. I've thought about exhibiting myself, and it's just like, well, I don't have $25,000 just kicking around. Yep. You know, and I kind of need, I don't want to look into how much my kidney would be in the secondary market to get a stamp exhibit up. So. Okay, we had a listener question this week. They wanted to know what's the best way to uncurl a stamp. They've got a collection, and there's a bunch of curly stamps in it. So what's the best way to fix that?
Well, I think to start with, you should determine whether your stamps are mint or used. If they have no gum, as long you check the catalog, make sure they don't have fugitive ink, but then you can just soak them in water for a little bit And then when you dry them, you press them underneath a catalog or something, and that will flatten them right out.
So what if they do have gum?
They do have gum, then that's a little more difficult. A lot of times that's due to humidity in the air. When it gets really dry, the moisture comes out of the gum, and it causes the stamp to curl. One method you can try is putting it in a room that has a higher humidity, maybe put a humidifier on the opposite side of the room and allow the humidity level in the room to gradually increase and see if that helps uncurl your stamps. And it takes a lot longer to have the stamps uncurl than it does for them to curl when it gets dry. And I keep a humidifier in the office just for that, because it does get really dry here in Southern California. So occasionally, if you wonder why I have a humidifier, that's to kind of just raise the humidity level in the office a little bit so the stamps don't curl. Because a lot of times you just take them out of a mount or out of a card, and you can set them on the desk and sit there and watch them curl. That's just the air sucking the humidity out of the gum.
Let me point out one more thing, too. There is another way that stamps curl. If it's on the inside end of a coil roll.
Yeah, that's true. The coils are different.
In that case, they're curled forever.
Really?
You can flatten them out as best as you can in a mount or something, but they're pretty much gone.
What about sticking them in a glass scene and dragging it over a sharp edge?
I don't recommend it, because you can always damage the stamp. I know a lot of people do that, and they don't have any problems with it.
Practice on cheap stuff first.
I'm afraid to do it myself, and I don't think that it's a good thing to do to your stamp.
It probably helps if you store it properly.
At the
not
very
the
least,
box.
You might crack the gum or damage, which in turn could damage the paper fibers of the stamp. And then when you take it out, you've got a busted stamp.
Okay, those are all good things. So, expert topic of the week was
hold
inspired.
On, before you get there, oh. I do have a follow-up. Not a casual correction, but a follow-up from last week when we were discussing San Francisco laws. And there were four of them that people sent me. One of them, and these are still on the books, one of them is that ugly people may not walk on down the street. It is illegal to walk down the street if you are ugly, disformed, or repulsive in any way. Second law was...
I guess I'm not going to San Francisco.
That's awesome.
You can't wax your car using underwear. I have no clue where that came from. You may not walk your pet lion down Market Street unless it's on a leash. I can't see a whole lot of tickets being given out for that. And this one is obviously from the 1890s. It is illegal to let horse manure pile up higher than 6 feet on a street corner.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
That sounds like kind of self-enforcing laws.
Well, apparently not if they had to make a law about it. One thing I learned about some of those weird, silly laws is that they're there for a reason, because usually out of protest of something, somebody did something ridiculous repeatedly enough where they had to make a law to prevent them from doing it.
Like walking your lion down Main Street and not having it on a leash.
Or washing your car with underwear.
Or washing your...
I wonder if Emperor Norton II had anything to do with those.
Oh, yeah. There you go. He was the king of San Francisco.
King of San Francisco.
Oh, that's
Emperor
right.
Of the United States.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have one last sort of correction. We were talking last episode about watermarks and when they occur in United States postage. And we had thought they ended in 1917, but if you look at envelopes and wrappers, they continue into... There's one series that used watermarks 49 and 50, which continued to 1992. I couldn't find anything after that, though, so they did discontinue them at some point.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week was inspired by the Maya Angelou error. So we're going to talk about stamp errors. So there's different kind of errors. Number one, design errors. There's also value error or substituted subject. Omission error, like missing color, missing overprint.
Missing perforations.
Yeah. Double impression, inverted error, color error, paper error, and imperforate error, which is the last one.
That's a lot of error.
Yeah, those are like the bigger categories. I'm sure there are like fly spec stuff in between.
Well, a tagging error would also fall into a missing ink.
Oh.
Because that was applied as it's basically a clear ink that reacts with ultraviolet light. So tagging errors would fall into that category as well.
But basically, yeah, there's two types of errors you named there. There's one where a stamp designer made a mistake, and there's another one where the stamp producer made the mistake.
Oh. So I know one is that's famous is the Statue of Liberty, which is the longest running error, I guess, in history, on the 2011 Forever stamp.
Where instead of using the Statue of Liberty, they use the Statue of Liberty from Las Vegas.
So that would have been a designer error.
That's a designer error.
Just the like same, the Maya Angelou stamp.
The Maggie Johnson stamp also has a designer error.
So that's versus things, production errors, where you get things like inverts.
Well, actually, me and Jessica both did a really cool search on design errors, and I found a couple of them, and she found a couple. Mine, I like Canada stamps, so Newfoundland had some great design errors. The first one is the caribou stamp that everybody has seen. If you collect Newfoundland, it's many values. The caribou actually has moose antlers, not caribou antlers. And in 1897, they made a series for John Cabot. And on the 2-cent stamp, they accidentally showed his son instead of him, his name was Sebastian Cabot, which I thought for everybody who was around in the 1970s watching TV. And the second problem was that when they showed Cabot's ship, they actually showed Columbus's ship.
That's a big difference.
So those were kind of interesting. And Jess has a couple of them, too.
Well, my favorite one is the, I better say this right this time, Dag Hammarskjöld.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one sheet found by, it was created during Postmaster General J. Edward Day's reign.
King.
It was a rainy day.
So it's called the Day's Folly. And it was discovered by...
a very sad individual.
Yes.
And we saw that sheet at the Riverside Show.
Leonard
Sherman.
Yes, they had
it in an exhibit.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, it's the only stamp that's ever gotten its own page in Mad Magazine.
Yes.
Instead of the Dag Hammarskjöld on their reproduction, it was that guy crying in front of the United Nations building. And from which we should all learn the lesson is that if you discover a big error sheet like that, a major error in an entire sheet of stamps, keep your yap shut until the production run is over.
Because, continue, Jessica.
Oh, well, they just did a big screw you and printed many, many more.
An entire press run and reprinted it with one of the colors inverted.
And he actually tried to sue them to stop them from doing that, but they'd already printed the stamps. So it was a big find, and he ended up donating it to the APS because, it wasn't worth anything anymore. But they did give him a letter saying, hey, this was the first one out of the 42,000 or million more than
that. It has autographs on it.
Oh, cool.
It has many, many signatures to prove that it was issued before the intentional.
That was the early one.
Intentional reissue, yeah.
Oh, here's one of my favorites is the 1898 $1 Western Cattle in the Storm is actually a picture of a bunch of cattle in the Scottish Highlands. So it's actually Western Scottish Highland cattle in the storm.
That's awesome.
Well, the name of the picture is also the Vanguard.
Yes.
That's not even the right picture name.
And my favorite, for my kid's favorite, is in 1989, they put out four dinosaur stamps. And one of the stamps has a picture of a brontosaurus on it. And everybody
you mean
who
a brachiosaurus?
Has, no, a brontosaurus.
Brontosaurus.
It says brontosaurus on the bottom. And so everybody likes to point out the fact that, oh, yeah, that doesn't exist.
Yep.
The fake dinosaur?
Well, they
misidentified.
When they originally dug it up, they found a body, and they found a head, and they just stuck the head on the body and called it a brontosaurus. Later on, like in the 1890s, I think it was, they discovered the mistake. And like in 1970s and 1980s, the brontosaurus was...
Became extinct again?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's what I meant by brachiosaurus. If I remember correctly, once it was properly identified, isn't that what they called it?
I believe that there were two of them. Brachiosaurus might have been one, but I... Mm-hmm. Seem to remember a different name.
Apatosaurus.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We have Lloyd here because he's
I know
so
everything.
Smart.
Yeah. A walking dictionary.
Yeah, I'm sure that the dinosaur community was up in arms about that one.
Oh,
I'm sure. Well, if you watched Friends, you know, Ross Geller, I mean, that was an enthusiastic dinosaur guy.
Yeah.
Now, along with, like, the Hammarskjöld stamp, the way they answered that, how come they didn't do that with the C3 invert? They knew it existed. They tried to get it back from the guy. Well, they just chose not to pursue it?
Different postmaster.
And I'll bet you that they didn't have the money part of it back then that they have now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Dag Hammarskjöld, those stamps could be worth, you know, $100,000, $150,000 each. Back then, you know, they're sitting there going, oh, man, that guy got a sheet of stamps that instead of 24 cents each, they're worth 10 bucks each. And they said, who cares?
Well, they cared enough to send the postal inspectors after him.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go over how to identify counterfeit errors on stamps. So there's a couple techniques I found. Bleaching. Another one where they cut out the design and manually invert it, reperforating, and colored pencil. That's what I could think of off the top of my head.
We got
I've
a really
seen
good
all
C3.
Of those.
We got a really good C3A in at one point where somebody had done that. They very carefully scooped out the center of a C3, and then they did it to another C3. And in one, they preserved the frame. The other, they preserved the vignette. And then they flipped one over and stuck it inside the other one and put it back together.
And it was so well done. It was gorgeous.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was too bad.
Well, this is like a part B to that, is that if a stamp is grossly underpriced by someone who presents themselves as a stamp dealer.
Yes.
You can generally conclude that it's not a good stamp.
Catalog value, $10,000. Yours for $15.
Or stolen.
Could be just stolen.
We saw, I know of a person who shall remain nameless.
Uh-oh.
He was selling color errors on the 1 cent Army Navy set. And instead of green, these were like a reddish brown. And, you know, it was, I forget what he used. It was an oxidizing agent that just turned the green ink into reddish brown ink, which is also a big reason why people out there, please be aware that if you have a red stamp that is a brownish red stamp, you might not have a color variety as much as you have a chemically altered stamp.
I've seen greens turn to blue. I've seen them turn to red. I've seen them turn to black.
Wow.
Green is a fun color to play with.
Oh, my mother was so impressed. She found a $100 bill that instead of having a green seal, It had a blue seal. And she showed it to me and said, oh, look at what I found. You know, how much do you think this is worth? And I go, well, it's worth $100 because it's pretty easy to turn green into blue. And sure enough, we pull it up on the internet, and there's a guy there who has taken a whole bunch of bills and turned half of it green and the other half blue, saying, hey, you know, this is not a color variety.
That's funny.
So my mom is not a millionaire.
as far as you know.
Oh, she did find something that was really cool, though, and she's going to give them to me to sell on eBay. When she was at the bank, she got $50 in $1 bills. And four of them were star notes. And star note is when they're out of sequence. And the serial numbers on them were 0000 783 784 and 785. So they were three-digit numbers. And those, I think, are pretty cool because people like poker bills and stuff like that. So it has seven zeros and then three numbers.
Hmm. Poker bills?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, you've never played dollar poker?
In the
Maybe
machine?
Not in your by definition.
By the look at your face, that would be a no.
Yeah, no, you pull out your $1 bills.
Oh, no.
And you the numbers are
poker hand.
Yeah, whoever
can make with serial number.
Yeah.
Wins.
Oh, so if you have three twos in your serial number, that's a three of a kind.
Yeah, and if you have five fives, then you've got a five of, you know, four of a kind or whatever.
Oh, bother.
This must have been
straights
before the
and flushes
invention
and
of the internet.
Pretty hard to get a flush there, Cash.
Yeah, it's hard to get a flush.
That's
funny.
On
the contrary, nothing's easier.
Oh, yeah.
They're always going to be a flush.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody sent us in a C1 not too long ago. I've seen toned C1s before, but this one was very obviously chemically altered because it was the paper was okay, but the ink was just a solid brown.
Yeah, that's not toned.
No.
That's not toned.
And it's not a color variety.
That's oxidized.
And sulfurized.
Or sulfurized. They call it oxidized.
So considering the lack of sulfur in the atmospheric content, I take it that had to have been done purposefully.
No. Just poor storage. You can put it on something with a high sulfur content paper, a high sulfur content mount.
You can live next. My parents live 50 miles or so from a paper plant.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a smell of sulfur in the air.
Smog,
And so anytime I don't take stamps when I go to visit my parents because I don't want to expose them to that atmosphere. It depends on which way the wind's blowing, and you never know. So
yeah, and it's not just C1; it's also the 6-cent Washington heads.
Oh, are those the yellow ones?
Orange ones.
Orange. Okay,
they'll turn the same color.
Huh, that's funny.
So will the yellow ones.
Yeah. So will
the yellow ones turn a
dingy.
It's a different brown, but they do change color. I've actually seen red ones change color, too.
I've seen purple ones change all sorts of colors.
How would a purple end up as?
Oh, they get bleached. Either the red is removed or the blue is removed. And there's different ways of doing both of them.
Okay.
One can be done by sunlight. One can be done chemically. And they just huge range of colors of them.
I remember that duck stamp we got in with the gum missing, right? And the text was on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And they had actually removed the gum with a Q-tip or something and just
left
the text.
Oh, yeah, painstaking. Painstaking work to make that one.
57B, RW57B.
Right.
It could have been, yeah. That sounds about right.
Oh, another way to, if you want to really freak people out, take your stamps and put them in the microwave. My favorite color variety missing was I forget what year it was, Lloyd will know, when they put the silver queen's heads.
This is a gold foil.
Or no, the gold foil ones stayed. The silver foil ones are the ones you can microwave off the silver foil, and the queen's head would disappear off the
just
stamp.
Just vaporizes it?
Just vaporize off.
Cool. Now I need to go find some of those.
So you had queen's head omitted.
So basically microwave stamps.
Yep.
Microwaves, colors, sunlight. You can just put a stamp in the sunlight.
Just check it out on your own collection.
Yeah.
I had a really nice
fluorescent light will also do that.
Oh, too much exposure. So don't use fluorescent bulbs too much. I had an E... 8 or something, a really nice, pretty dark blue stamp. Tried to clean it, too much bleach in the water, forgot it was there, came back, and it was an incredibly light ultramarine.
Yep. Acetone, too. Acetone will sort of not just lighten it, but it'll make it blurry. Also, Open Flame. I had a stamp become very, very brown and crisp when subjected to an open flame.
Yeah, they tend to do that.
They do.
I know we got a nice, was that Pigeon Blood stamp in that was actually colored in with the colored pencil?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was a weird one.
Gorgeous.
What happened was it was improperly stored. And in my opinion, and I think this is...
No, you're talking... This is a different stamp. This was just a regular 65. Somebody had taken a pink colored pencil.
Oh, really?
And they'd colored on it.
No.
And we put it in our VSC machine, and you can see the strokes of the pencil where they colored it in, because they didn't... It wasn't completely covered.
Ah.
But it was just light enough to when you held it out at arm's length, your eye didn't perceive the pencil strokes, and it just all mushed together and changed the color that you perceive.
Well, that's a new one.
So it looked kind of waxy, didn't it? It had kind of a shine to it, or
yeah, it looked a little different.
It had an odd color, but as soon as you put a loop on it, you could start to see areas where the colors were different.
Two different inks.
And then you realize, hey, wait a minute. Somebody took a pencil to this.
What about fake overprints?
Well, that's not an error,
though. That's not an error.
It's just a fake.
Just a fake.
That's just a fake.
Well, I mean, they try to fake the inverted overprints.
That's true.
Or double overprints.
Oh, double overprints are a common one that gets faked a lot.
On you.
Yeah, but that's not an error. Well, there are true double overprints.
Yes, and those are
errors. But they're also can be faked. So you definitely have to have those checked.
Faked on you stamps mostly, right?
Harder to fake them on a mint stamp, but it's not necessary that it's on a used stamp.
Well, the coolest error that I've seen lately is, and I'll give a plug to Bobby Prager out there who's trying to sell them. He submitted a sheet of the Crane stamp with the value and the USA omitted, and it is the coolest looking stamp. I mean, it's just like a crane, and it's a joint issue with China, and it's just a magnificent looking error.
That one came in the package still, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, it's made to open. So is that one going to be worth something then?
Oh, yeah.
Is it the only one known?
It's striking. It's great looking.
The error catalog says there's 3 or 4 sheets known. When I talked to Bobby, he said he knew about this sheet and one other sheet. I don't know where they got the number of sheets available from the catalog, and I don't know whether the sheet that he had was one of the ones that was included or not. But they are very, very rare.
And very cool.
Well, I ask because some of these errors just aren't very rare. I have a stamp. It's from some weird African country like Tuvalu or Congo or something, where it's got a design frame and then a vignette inside of a giraffe, and it's flipped over.
Oh, yeah.
Obvious invert. And I first saw that on an auction board, and I went, that's really cool, but how come it's only $15?
I have a funny feeling it's Madagascar.
It could have been. And it just turned out that the government made the error, and they went, who cares? And they just kept printing them that way. They didn't care. So there's less of them than the regular one, even though it's a glaring, obvious error. But they just kept printing them. They didn't destroy them.
Look at some South American, Central American countries. They overprinted a lot of stamps, and their overprints are all over the place. And you can get inverted overprints, double overprints, triple overprints for, $10, $15, $20.
Mm-hmm.
And the regular stamp is, a dollar.
Yep.
But well, that's what we see here.
They didn't care.
I collect U.S. officials, and I think I said this last podcast, they did not care. They were U.S. officials were like, we don't want to use scotch tape on these print some stamps so that we can use them instead. They didn't care. So a lot of the errors actually got Scott numbers as varieties. And, you know, they just printed them any way they wanted, any way they could. They wanted them as cheap as possible because, you know, like I said, they replaced Scotch tape. And so you have a whole bunch of errors that have major catalog numbers.
Okay, so that probably about wraps it up.
Sounds good to me.
So basically, it's like quality control of the country depends how much the error's worth.
Speaking about quality control of podcasts also.
Okay, so let's drum roll.
I've got it right here. And let's see if he plays the wah-wah-wah before I actually get it open.
His thumb is hovering over the button.
And you will be so embarrassed if this is actually one of the valuable ones. It's a normal.
Oh.
Maybe next time.
One of these days, Alice. One of these days.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowhereToday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook, stampshowhereToday, and our website, www.stampshowhereToday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave a voicemail at Google Voice anytime. Number is country code 1-949-873-4298. And there's a link to our Google Voice on our website so you can make a call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hello there, this is Chad Snee. I'm the editor of Lynn Stamp News and the Scott Publishing Company, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.